Are you enjoying this free audiobook from Scribble.com? You may not know that Scribble has much more than just free audiobooks. Audiobooks, ebooks, we're adding new titles all the time. You can skip these ads and get higher quality audio files by purchasing audiobooks on Scribble. Even better, every audiobook you buy from Scribble comes with the ebook at no additional charge. Visit us at Scribble.com. That's Scribble.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome to the serialized short story audiobook collection, Bones Are White, by Scott Sigler. Get the stories in Bones Are White for all ebook readers at scottsigler.com/bonesarewhite, or from that same page as a full-length audiobook. You can also buy the ebook version directly from the Kindle Store, the Nook Store, Apple's iBooks, and from Google Play. This book contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, cue up some Taylor Swift and enjoy.
How to Make a Sea Breeze. The tram was broken again. Three passenger cars and one flatbed sat idle in the middle of the track. Some people were hanging around, waiting for it to be fixed. Fat people, mostly. The station is only 2 miles in circumference, so no matter where you're going, the walk is never more than a mile away. Know who won't walk a mile or less? Yeah, fat people. Carney Powers' place was only a quarter mile away. We opted to use our perfectly good feet rather than wait for a tram repair crew to show up. Brock was still having trouble comprehending our dilemma. He had this concept that the world was fair. That got him into trouble more often than not.
"But we didn't kill the president," Brock said. "Why do we owe Latilton again? I still don't get this."
Brock is an interesting guy. Sometimes he's pretty smart. Most of the time, though, he couldn't win a debate with my balls. And my balls aren't exactly known for their debate skills. "We were supposed to get the president's money, Brock. We didn't get it. If we had gotten to the president sooner, maybe he wouldn't be dead, and maybe Latilton would have his money. Now do you get it?" He stopped walking and stared at me.
"You're saying that if I hadn't spent that time looking at the toilet paper, we might not owe Latilton?"
That wasn't what I was saying at all, but Brock looked crushed, like somehow this was his fault. So I went with it. I shrugged. "I wasn't going to say that, buddy." His big hands curled into big fists. He snarled a little. Brock loved everyone. He only snarled when he was mad at himself.
"But it was such a bargain, Rabbi! I couldn't help it!"
I know, Sockman, I know. Come on, we have to figure out who wanted the president dead or we're screwed." We started walking again. Brock was really upset. I felt a little guilty for perpetuating that, but not too much. A motivated Big Ugly was far better than a distracted Big Ugly. The meatpacking district is, frankly, kind of fucking gross. For some reason, they don't have a lot of industrial facilities over in the Hare 4 orbital, which is the closest station to New Hoboken. There are skin corpses all over the place, hanging on hooks and racks, and you can hear the thwack of meat cleavers every minute of every day. This is the food for the richest residents of New Hoboken. They don't truck with lobsters in this district, I assure you. I got to eat an unlimited amount of steak once after one of my wins. I got meat drunk as all get out. There's a lot of working people in the MPD, but like everywhere else on the lower decks, there's a lot of people who do nothing but sit on their ass all day. They either sit on the side decks, in storefronts, or in bars. Plenty of bars down here to house them. The drinking industry is one business that never seems to lose money. We closed in on Carney's place. We were only about 100 feet away from her shop when I saw a man approaching. It didn't take much to see he was trouble. Big dude, not an ounce of body fat on him, wearing a leather vest and no shirt to make sure everyone saw his cut, tattooed body. 250 if he was a pound. He had his eyes on Brock.
"I feel awful," Brock said to me. "Rabbi, I didn't mean to get you into this mess."
The guy crossed the road and started yelling our way.
"Hey, you Sockman? You that heavyweight motherfucker badass, right?"
Brock didn't seem to hear the man. He kept walking.
"It's just that I really like two-ply, Rabbi. My butthole gets all chafed, you know? Mom always said to be nice to everyone, including yourself. I just wanted to be nice to my butthole."
"Brock, this ain't the time to talk about being civil to your poop chute, okay?" The tough guy literally started circling us, his chest all puffed out, his muscles flexed as if that would intimidate us.
"You ain't shit, Sockman," the man said. "I saw that fight against J.R. Young. He made you his bitch, man."
Brock still didn't hear the man. He shook his head.
"I can't help it if I have a sensitive pooper, Rabbi. I like figs. Sometimes I eat too many and I get the runs. Makes my pooper burn real bad."
Brock was oblivious. I was going to have to do something about this myself. I watched the tough guy, mapped out a quick strategy. Nut shot, elbow to the temple. If that sent him down, then a knee to the face. If he stayed standing, then lock up his wrist and cut to the chase with a flying armbar. If the guy had buddies, I wouldn't go to the ground. But he was a dummy who'd stepped up without backup.
"You're a little bitch, Sockman," the thug said. "You can't even win in the ring, and there ain't no ring in these streets! Woo!"
Brock shook his head.
"No one wants a burning butthole, Rabbi. It feels like I'm shitting fire, you know? Shitting razors made of fire."
Brock, maybe you should pay attention here." The tough guy then stepped in front of us, blocking our path. He put his fists up, the very picture of a muscled fighter stepping up for the first blow.
"Woo!"
the man said. Brock didn't even look up. His right fist shot out, slid between the tough's fists, and smashed him on the nose. It wasn't that much of a jab, not by pro fighter standards anyway, but the thug's head rocked back, trailing an arc of blood. He fell like a sack of shit. Brock didn't even break stride. He stepped over the thug and kept walking.
"Stupid figs," he said. "Why do I have to like figs so much, Rabbi?"
I stepped over the fallen thug. Guy looked like he had a smashed tomato for a nose. "I don't know, Brock," I said. "We all have our vices, I guess." We reached Carney's bar. There was a woman on the sidewalk just outside the door, vomiting something green and viscous. A man stood next to her, the look in his eyes showing that as soon as she was finished hurling, he was taking her somewhere to fuck her. Ah, the blossom of romance ever blooms in New Hoboken. We walked in. It was mid-afternoon. People should have been at work, but the bar was about a quarter full. This was prime time for professional drinkers, the new hobos who had written off accomplishing something in their life other than abusing their tattered livers. Fortunately, a new liver only costs about a week's wages nowadays, so there was little to stop these alkies from further mastering their zen-like dedication to getting fucked up. Three people sat at the bar. At the far end, a guy was asleep right on top of it. Most places, you get thrown out for that. Carney had put a pillow under his head and a puke bucket next to it. She was all about customer service like that. Behind the bar, resplendent in a sequined bikini top that hadn't fit her all that well some 30 pounds ago, stood the owner of this fine establishment. She saw us and smiled that smile the one that made everyone instantly like her, instantly trust her. Rabbi, get over here and give Mama a hug and bring that big, sexy fellow with you. I heard Brock sigh. I leaned over the bar to give her that hug. Carney Powers was big enough that I damn near vanished into her sequined tits. She was 6 feet tall, maybe a bit more. Her excess weight wasn't from muscle. Carney Powers wasn't shy about ordering a third dessert, if you know what I mean. I like my women about my size, but there was something about Carney. She was warm, soft, and damned if she didn't always smell good. You never knew what color her hair was going to be. That time it was pink, streaked through with locks of yellow striped black. She squeezed me hard enough that I considered tapping out, then put her big hands on my shoulders and held me at arm's length. The rabid rabbi in my bar once again. Been too long, Joe. I nodded.
It has, Carney.
It's an understatement to say Carney Powers is a woman of great appetites. She can outdrink most men, out-eat anyone, and out-fuck the offensive line of the new Hoboken horse boys. Fortunately for me, Carney usually only lusted after guys that were bigger than she was. That let me off the hook. Brock, on the other hand, not so much. She let go of me and held her arms out for Brock. Don't you stand there, big sexy. Come give Mama some sugar. Swear to gods, Brock whined a little. Ever hear a 6'3", 245-pound man whine? It is not a pretty sound. Brock, I said, give Carney a hug already. Brock stepped up and leaned over the bar into Carney's arms. She damn near lifted him off his feet. He let out a woof as she squeezed him. Her lipstick lips nuzzled into his ear. She said. You've been working out, Brock? You feel good. Brock tried to lean away. She squeezed him harder, her hand rubbing up and down his back. She grabbed his ass at just about the same time the tip of her tongue flicked his ear. And firm, she said. Good boy. Brock pulled away. Swear to gods, he took a step behind me like I could protect him or something. Carney, I said, we need some information. Her smile widened. What a surprise. And what makes you think I know anything? I took a seat at the bar and leaned in so I wouldn't have to talk loud. Brock did the same. Carney leaned down as well, pink hair falling down almost to the bar top. It's about the president, I said. He said you had something of his. Her eyes narrowed. Khan said that? I shrugged. The president hadn't said as much specifically, but I wasn't going to tell Carney that. Carney winked at me. Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. Where is Mr. President anyway? He usually comes here after he does his fruit shopping.
Dead, I said. Killed by a bunch of grapes.
Grapes? He was killed by grapes? Brock nodded.
Plastic ones. Blew up his head.
For the first time, Carney's smile faded. The president is dead, for real? Brock and I nodded. Carney shrugged. That is a shame. Everyone loved the president.
Not everyone, apparently, I said. Someone didn't like him very much at all.
He was bringing us here, Carney. He said he had money here. He owed Littilton a big sum. At the mention of that name, Carney stood up. Littilton? The president owed money to Littilton? I nodded. And now we need to collect, so help us out. What do you know? She chewed her lower lip for a second, then pulled out 3 shot glasses and set them on the bar. First, a drink. She poured bourbon, vodka, and some cranberry juice, then added a purple sugar cube, a lemon twist, and a cherry. It sounds like that would take forever, but her hands moved crazy fast. She always had fast hands, fast and warm. Not that I'd know from personal experience, mind you. That was just the word that got around. Honest. She held up her shot glass. To the president. I picked up mine. To the president. Brock picked up his and held it close to his face.
What the hell is this?
Carney smiled. That's a purple cherry ass pucker, big sexy. Drink up. The name didn't seem to sit well with Brock. Carney threw hers back, then chewed on the cherry and sugar cube in her mouth. I did the same. I'm more of a beer guy, but that woman can mix some tasty concoctions. Brock sighed and threw his drink back. He grimaced as he crunched the sugar cube. I set the shot glass on the bar. So, Carney, can you help us? She wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. It made her lipstick smear a little to the right. Sure, I can, Rabbi. I can see to it that you hear what you need to hear. But you want something. So do I. How about you tend bar for me while I take Brock to the back room to talk things over? Brock whined again. Poor guy.
Just tell us now, he said. No need to go to the back.
Oh, there's a need, Carney said. Brock looked very, very sad. He turned to me as if to say, can you help me? I shrugged. If we don't get that info, Big Ugly, Mr. Littilton will not be appreciative of our inability to comply with his demands. Brock hung his head. He stood up. He put his hand on my shoulder.
If I don't make it back, he said, tell my mom I did my best.
I had no idea what the hell he was talking about, but I nodded all the same. I hopped over the bar to Carney's side. She gestured to the bottles behind the bar. You know how to make a sea breeze? I looked around the bar. Doesn't seem like the place where there's a lot of people ordering a sea breeze, to be honest. Smart ass, she said. This is important. Do you know how to make one? Sure, I said. A sea breeze is Jack and Coke. She frowned. How about a Cosmo? I nodded. Jack and Coke in a martini glass. And I suppose I'm crazy to ask if you know how to make a martini?
That's easy. Jack and Coke in a martini glass with an olive on a little red plastic sword.
Carney rolled her eyes. Good thing you know how to fight, Rabbi. Come on, Brock. Let's go.
There was a door down there that led into a back room. Con Carney's back room. A place of myth and legend. Not that I know personally, mind you. Honest. She stopped at the end of the bar and leaned down to talk to the guy lying on top of it. She gently shook his shoulder. Maybe she was checking to see if he was alive. If he was dead, that wasn't my problem, not unless a Jack and Coke could bring the deceased back to life. Carney took Brock's hand and led him into the back room. Funny how throughout history, some things never change. If Brock wanted to take advantage of Carney, you'd have 17 cops and a rep from the New Hoboken Association of Female Rights down here faster than a Budweiser made you belch. The NHAFR ladies didn't fuck around. But a woman taking advantage of a man? Hallmark doesn't even make a sympathy card for something like that. Carney got Brock. I got to play bartender. At least it was fun for me. First things first. Serve the man behind the bar a nice Bud Light. Ah, the taste of tradition. I hoped Carney actually had info and wasn't just using this to get laid, or at least to do whatever she was going to do with Brock.
Or to Brock, actually. Not that I know personally. Honest. One of the three bar patrons stumbled out the door. The other two asked for refills. The first on a Boilermaker, the second on a Tom Collins. I gave them both a Jack and Coke. Neither of them said a thing after the first sip, furthering my hypothesis that all mixed drinks are just variations on whiskey and carbonated sugar water. I'm a scientist like that.
Hey, mister.
I looked at the two bar patrons. They were still staring into their Boilermaker and their Tom Collins, respectively. They didn't look like they'd said anything.
Hey, mister. Down here.
I turned to look at the end of the bar. The guy lying there had his head up, and he was looking at me. His gray stubble face pulled back into a smile of mostly missing teeth. The ones that remained were a delightful shade of chartreuse.
Connie said you wanted to know something about the president.
Ah, poor Brock. I can see to it that you hear what you need to hear, Carney had said. She'd never mentioned exactly who would give me that information. I walked down to the end of the bar. Halfway there, I smelled the guy's breath. Drugs of some kind, for sure.
Who does that to their body? I mean, people make fun of fighters because we choose to get the shit kicked out of us. Get broken noses and split lips, suffer impaired vision for the rest of our lives, even get brain damage. Sure. But drugs?
I stepped in front of the guy. What do you know? He smiled wider.
Mister, I sure am thirsty. How about a sea breeze?
That figured. I poured him a Jack and Coke. I grabbed the red plastic sword out of a glass full of them, stuck an olive on it, put that in his drink, and handed him the glass. He stared at it.
That's not a sea breeze.
It's what you're drinking, asshole. He looked at me and raised his eyebrows.
Yeah, so it is.
He knocked it back in one pull.
Delicious.
I took the glass from him, accidentally touching his fingers as I did. His skin felt oily, clammy, repulsive. Why don't people like this just eat a bullet and get it done faster? The president, I said. What do you know? The green tooth smile returned. His eyes narrowed in delight. I knew that look. He thought he had the power and was going to get something he wanted. Something more than just a sea breeze.
Hey, mister, he said. I saw that your friend went in the back with Connie. Maybe if you go in the back with me, I tell you what you want to hear. I want to show you something.
I nodded. Maybe. I reached over and grabbed all of the little red plastic swords out of the glass. There had to be 50 of them. And maybe I'll have you show me that something, then see how many of these things I can stab into it. I held out a handful of red plastic swords. He stared at them, his eyes widening. I reached over and grabbed a little paper umbrella. And when I'm out of swords, I'll put this on the top. He shook his head.
Jeez, mister, never mind. And I thought I was a little kinky.
I forced myself to lean in despite the stink of his mouth and his body. Listen, asshole, what's your name?
Meth Cow.
Your name is Meth Cow? He nodded.
That's what they call me.
What's your real name? He thought for a moment, then shrugged.
I don't know. I used to work in a circus, in a barn mostly. I knew there were firemen and this dog, this fine heroic dog. He bit me in the ass and I had to get a shot. I don't remember much before that. People call me Meth Cow on account of how I dealt meth in the barn. You know, where cows stay.
I'll do my best to put the pieces together, sure.
Anyway, Meth Cow is the only name I know, mister.
Well, listen, Meth Cow, here's my situation. I have a powerful man who is quite upset with me. He wants to know where the president's money is. And if I don't find out for him, he's going to kill me. Then have a tiny dog drop a deuce on my forehead. That's not a metaphor, by the way. If this man decides he's coming after me, I'll come after you first. Since I'll know I'm about to die and have my corpse desecrated, I'll be fussy. When I'm fussy, I want to hurt people. Ask me if I think there's an afterlife.
Do you think there's an afterlife?
No, I said. I don't think there's an afterlife. That means I don't think there's some punishment waiting for me if I kill you in a very slow, horrible way. Since your unwillingness to give me information will directly lead to my death, you will, in effect, cause my death. It's A plus B equals C. You understand?
Is that the Pythagorean theorem?
Sure, I said, even though I had no idea what he was talking about.
Hey, mister. No offense, but I've had my ass kicked by guys who are a lot bigger than you. Know what I mean?
I nodded. Have you heard of the Rabid Rabbi?
Sure, he said. I go to synagogue every week. Ain't a Jew on this station hasn't heard of the rabbi.
That's me. He sat up.
No shit.
No shit. Since you know about the Rabid Rabbi, which is me, you probably know that said rabbi of the Rabid Persuasion is a submission hold specialist. In case you don't follow the fight game, that means I know how to use my bare hands to break things like elbows, knees, ankles. It's about leverage, you see, not strength. I also do fingers and toes, but only when I'm extra fussy. And if I'm feeling really motivated, I could break all of your major joints right here in Con Carnes, right this very moment. It would take a good hour to get through all the joints, though. I don't like to rush things. For emphasis, I started picking up little red plastic swords. As I talked, I broke off the handles, then dropped the pieces on the bar in front of the man.
You wouldn't be able to crawl out of here, Mr. Cow. You'd just lie there, screaming, mostly. But maybe, also asking for a sea breeze or two, to dull the pain, perhaps.
That's what could happen if I just get regular fussy. Since my life may end with a new Hoboken steamer on my forehead, I'm feeling double plus extra fussy. So how about you tell me what you know and we knock my fussiness meter back a notch or three?
He smiled again, this time in that way that bullshitters do when they think you'll believe what they say, even though they have no idea that they are really bad at bullshit. Hey, mister, no need for all the hostility. Why didn't you just tell me who you were? From one Jew to another, I'm happy to help you out.
There. That was better. Now we'd established the ground rules. I gave him another sea breeze, this time with two olives. I'm generous like that.
He leaned in like we were buddies. Holy dog shit on a corpse's forehead. Did this man smell?
The president comes in here every day, Metcalf said. A month ago, he started meeting with the magician.
The magician?
Oh, shit. Just so I'm not confusing the parties involved, I said, this wouldn't be the magician who also kills people for a living. Methcow nodded.
One in the same.
Part of me hoped there was still a mistake. No, all of me hoped it. I patted the top of my head. Blonde? Spiky hair up here? Always conning people at bars with card tricks and such?
That's the guy, Methcow said. 2 weeks ago, the president brought the magician a briefcase.
2 weeks ago was when John Conn had borrowed the money from Chad Letilton. The pieces fell into place. The grapes, Letilton's loan to the president, the magician, the high-stake game of the Association of Retired Persons, it all lined up. The bum's eyes drifted to the red plastic swords remaining in my hand.
You know, Rabbi, I never actually tried having something stuck in my balls. Maybe if you do some meth with me, we could give it a shot.
At that moment, I wondered if maybe I was the deviant. Maybe I was the only guy on New Hoboken who liked regular old missionary sex with a regular girl. No squirrel suits, no pizza porn, no back of the barn, no swords in the nutsack, and no whatever Carney was doing to my buddy Brock. At that moment, Brock ran out of the back room and into the bar proper. He was pulling up his jeans and zipping them up at the same time. He almost fell flat on his face. There was a look of panic in his eyes.
Rabbi, okay, she wouldn't give me the info, even though
She and I what, Brock? He rubbed his backside.
Nothing. I don't want to talk about it.
Carney came out of the back room. She wasn't wearing the sequined bikini top anymore. Her tits were well proportioned to the rest of her oversized body, which meant they were God's damn impressive. She was all smiles. She looked at Brock the way a cat looks at a mouse.
Sockman, she said, you come back any old time.
Brock ran behind me.
I did my part. Now tell the rabbi what he wants to know.
I pointed at Methcow. I already know. Brock, this guy gave me some good info. Brock looked at me, wide-eyed and disbelieving. Then he looked at Methcow, then at Carney.
But she has the info.
Carney shrugged.
I said I could make sure that you get the info. I don't know shit.
Brock looked at all of us again, repeating the cycle, his eyes getting even wider.
Then all we had to do was talk to that guy. I didn't have to go in the room with you, and I didn't have to.
He rubbed his backside.
The poor guy.
Doesn't matter, Big Ugly. I know where we need to go. Brock glared at Carney.
You tricked me.
She laughed.
Go ahead and tell Mama you didn't like it. You came here. You got what you wanted. So did I. Everyone wins.
Everyone except my behind,
Brock said, his eyes never leaving Carney.
Rabbi, she wasn't nice to my... Okay, Sockman, let's not tell tales out of school.
I didn't want to hear anymore. We have to go.
Go where?
Deck 18. His head snapped around so fast, I thought he might hurt himself.
Deck 18, why would we go down there?
We have to talk to the magician. Brock stared, then patted the top of his head.
That magician?
I nodded. He looked at Carney again, as if maybe he'd rather stay here with her after all. Brock, I said, we don't have a choice. The magician is our only chance to get the president's money. If we don't get it, you know what's going to happen to us. The big man sighed and nodded.
I just don't understand today's theme.
Today's theme? What are you talking about?
The number two theme, he said. Everything today seems to involve either number two or the part it comes out of.
You have been listening to The Bones Are White serialized short story audiobook written by Scott Sigler. This audiobook was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author or to hear his free weekly fiction podcast, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Greed by the band Separation of Sanity.
I am a creeping cancer, rots you to the core, pumping through your blackened heart, seduction of your soul, separation of your senses, sanity, your currency. I am your rolling gun, on your knees, kiss the screen.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.